Shrink Wrap Radio number 352, Creative and Therapeutic Uses of Tarot, with Andrew Metzner.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
My guest today is social worker and psychotherapist Andrew Metzner, and we'll be discussing the use of tarot for creative self-discovery and therapy. Andy Metzner is a licensed clinical social worker and psychotherapist. He also is adjunct faculty at Virginia Western Community College in the mental health and psychology programs and Hollins University Gender and Women's Studies. In addition to his MSW, Andy has a master's degree in anthropology and a master's in European languages and literatures. He says perhaps one day he'll be able to trade them all in for a PhD. As a therapist, Andy specializes in serving transgender clients in Southwest Virginia, where resources are quite slim. He is the author of O'Aonokea, Voices from Hawaii's Mahu and Transgender Communities, Male Bodies, Women's Souls, Personal Narratives of Thailand's Transgendered Youth, which he co-authored with Liray Costa, and The Buddha Diet, A Guide to Creating a Positive Relationship with Food and Eating. Andy is also a tarot card reader and has recently published the Tarot Activity Book, a collection of creative and therapeutic uses for the cards. Now, here's the interview. Andy Metzner, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you.
Well, I have enjoyed our email exchanges, and I must say you're a very interesting person who has written an equally interesting book about the tarot.
Thank you. I'm glad that it has resonated with you.
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember how we got connected. I think you wrote to me as a result of something I posted on the Depth Psychology Alliance. Do I have that right?
I'm not sure. I teach at a community college, and I will have my students at different times listen to your podcast as an assignment.
Great. So you're a listener then.
I'm a listener, a big fan.
Yay. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. That's how we're connected.
Yep.
As you know, I just returned from a tarot conference in New York City. We're going to be talking about your book, but I just returned from a tarot conference in New York City, and I recall that you've been to the Tarot Readers Studio, I guess it's called, their conferences in the past, and you said you wished you could have attended this one. So for starters, maybe you'd like to interview me about my experience there, because I'm sure some of our listeners will be curious about that as well.
Yes, I'm actually curious about your experiences, because this I've been twice before, a couple years ago. Unfortunately, this year it's the same time as my semester is ending, so I couldn't attend. But what I wanted to ask you about, this is the first year they've actually had a pre-conference, one day, devoted to psychology and tarot. And I'm curious, because you were a speaker.
Right.
So I know that you were talking about hypnosis and tarot.
Yes.
So I wonder if you could describe what you brought to the audience. Why don't we do that first? What did you bring to the tarot table in New York?
Yeah, right. Good. Well, you've already kind of tipped the hand a little bit. I have to tell you, first of all, I was really anxious about my presentation beforehand, and maybe even lost a little sleep, which is not unusual for me. I tend to get anxious about such things, and you know, trying to imagine an audience that I've never seen, that you don't really know who's going to be out there and what they're going to be like, etc. Well, to jump ahead, I think it went fabulously, and it seemed like my presentation was extremely well received. And the part that was making me nervous was I decided to start with personal stories, and and kind of my big sort of synchronistic story, which listeners have heard and you might have heard. I think it was on Shrink Wrap Radio 308. And so I was nervous about, was I just being self-indulgent, and would it really tie into the presentation? And I think it did. People told me that it did, so I'll take their word for it. So I talked about, I basically addressed two different questions. What can psychology offer to tarot, and what can tarot offer to psychology? And for the most part, I was, when I say psychology, I think I really meant psychotherapy, because I think that's the main connecting point. And of course, I sort of linked a lot of this to the 60s, which represented a renaissance for both Carl Jung, not for Jung himself, but for Jungian psychology and for the tarot, because I think both kind of, you know, enjoyed a revival of interest, because both had something to offer that time, that period in time. So I kind of talked about that, and without going through the whole presentation, I'd be happy to, by the way, I could send you a PDF of the presentation, and you'd probably enjoy looking at that, and that would tell you a lot about what I covered and what I did.
Sure.
The activity that I did involve hypnosis. I did a fairly quick hypnotic induction with the group, and asked them to, you know, once they seemed to be in a good trance place, I suggested that I would count to three, and at the count of three, they would have a dream, and or get an image or a sound or a word, but something that would symbolize what the next step in their growth as a tarot reader might be. Some new skill that they needed to develop, some new aspect of their personality, something. And then in small groups of three, four, five, that they would share that after they came out of the hypnosis, and each of the listeners in their small group would then either choose a card from their own personal decks at random, or one that they just, based on their experience, they felt would really speak to the image. And the dreamer was also instructed to draw a card. And so there would be some sharing and amplification. I talked about Jungian amplification, that they would kind of use this to amplify that image. And then lay all the cards out, the individual card that each person had chosen, as a kind of spread, put that in some kind of order. And so it looked very productive. People were, you know, really involved in it and engaged. I walked around the room and kind of eavesdropped at some of the tables.
Uh-huh.
So that's what it was.
Wow, that's great. And so what was the sense you got, because this was the first year of dedicating a day to tarot and psychology, what was the sense you got in general about people's willingness to consider what psychology has to offer them as tarot readers?
Yeah, I would say they were very eager. And there were about 180 people who signed up for that conference. It was pretty amazing. I mean, they had to pay a separate fee, right, in addition to the fee that they would pay for the three-day conference. And so, you know, they were willing to lay out some money. I was impressed by that. 180 people. I met one person from as far away as New Zealand who had come for this.
Oh, wow.
Somebody else from Puerto Rico. You know, and I didn't talk to everybody, so I don't know where all people came from. And I think there were about 25 of them, I would guess, 25 or so, who were therapists of some sort or another, who, you know, were social workers or counselors or psychologists, psychiatrists. And so I think they were very open to it. Amber Stone, you know, who kind of introduced the day and introduced me, he set it up very nicely. I can't begin to repeat it, but he really framed everything in a very nice way and kind of saying, this is a new thing in the world that has never happened before, and it really betokens a new dawn for both psychology and Tarot. So he really wants to see these linkages built. And I think his fantasy, he had said to me that if it was successful, then it would be something that maybe he'd want to do every 2 or 3 years.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. So we need to get on to you. So I'll just tell you that I cut out after I actually didn't get to hear all three presentations that day because I have a son who lives in Manhattan and he had some friends who were preparing a birthday dinner for him that evening, and he wanted me to attend. So I missed the rest of the conference. Can't tell you anything about the rest of it. But let's talk enough about me, as they say. Let's talk about you. One of the things that that I talked about, and I saw your blog too, so I know you'll light up to this, was Joseph Campbell and his concept of the call. And I told the story of, quotes, my call to the Tarot, and asked people, did they have a sense of having had a call to the Tarot? And a lot of people raised their hands. So that's where I want to start with you. When and how did you get the call to the Tarot?
That's a great question, because it's funny. I really, growing up, never experienced tarot card readers, never had a reading done. Actually, I lived outside of New York City, and one day a friend and I were in the city, and he ended up getting a reading, and I didn't. It's just nothing ever about the tarot resonated with me until I was in grad school, University of Hawaii, and I was looking for a hobby, something outside of my studies. I was studying anthropology, but I just wanted something to do for fun. I love to read, and I was in a bookstore, and I was looking at the astrology section, the tarot section, and I thought, you know, tarot cards, I know nothing about them. This might be interesting. I like learning things from the ground up. But I can remember very clearly grabbing a book and opening it and being petrified. Just, it looks so complicated. Just the way, I don't, and I'm kind of curious now about what book was it, you know, because now I've read so many books, but it completely put me off. I thought, there's no way I can learn any of this. There's just too much. So book went back on the shelf. I went on my merry way, took up drumming, you know, kind of went on with my life I'm thinking maybe about 6 or 7 years.
Okay.
It never really, never gave it a second thought. But ended up going into social work, got my master's in social work, and ended up moving to Virginia. And when I graduated, I got a job as a case manager for a big agency, and ended up having a lot of free time. I mean, I had a huge caseload, but I just, you know, there'd be hours during the day where I was just sitting at my computer, you know, twiddling my thumbs. And so I thought, you know, I've got this free time. What can I do? You know, I can't sit and read a book. You know, I've done everything I've needed to do for the day, but how do I keep myself occupied? And I ended up, and again, I can't recall how this happened, but the exact opposite of what had happened before happened, where I stumbled upon an online course on the web, that taught the tarot, and actually Joan Bunning, it's her course, and it was free, and it was the most user-friendly, easy to understand explanation of the tarot. And from that moment, I can remember, after I found it, oh, you know what, this is really interesting, I can do this. And I became hooked. And to fully answer your question, the thing that really got me, where I think that I was called to use the tarot, was when I got my first deck, which was what's known as the Rider-Waite deck, which is the most common, you know, it's a very common deck what people often start with. But
yeah, and I'm still stuck there, I have to confess. It's my favorite deck.
Listen, that's okay, because that's what happened to me. I mean, to this day, you know, there's something about that deck that absolutely grabbed me. And I think that's when I was called. And that's why over the last, you know, since 2004, really, I'm absolutely in love with this deck. And so I think from that beginning, knowing that I could handle it, learning-wise, but also these cards, each one resonated with me on such a deep level. I think it was at that point where I knew, okay, I'm in this for good. You know, I'm going to spend the rest of my life learning about these cards and how to use them. And that's why, yeah, that's why I'm so enamored with Pamela Coleman Smith, the artist. There's something, and I've looked at hundreds, again, remembering that I had all this free time. You know, there are hundreds and hundreds of decks out there.
Yes, there are.
There are, and the images are online, and I've looked probably at all of them, and there's one deck that I love. It's called the Gaian Tarot, which is an amazing deck, but I still always come back to the Rider-Waite deck.
I have one other favorite deck myself, which is the Alchemical deck, and I mentioned that in my presentation, and the guy who created that deck was there.
Oh, great.
Yeah, he said, "Hey, thank you for mentioning my deck, and you know, he'd like to be interviewed here. We might do that at some point."
Ah, neat. Yeah. So and that's the thing. I think anyone who gets into tarot knows that the deck can be magical as far as the artwork really grabbing a person and facilitating them on that journey. So as far as the call goes, I think that's what did it. You know.
Yeah. Now, what do you think it is about the images that grabbed you?
Well, and that's another great question, because Pamela Coleman Smith, very interesting story. You know, she was very young when she painted. She was, and just to give readers a background, this was an American woman born in 1878. And she, as an artist, she ended up dying in 1951, but she had a lot of involvement in the theater, and as an artist, never really became successful. She ended up passing away in debt. You know, she never really made it. But she, in 1909, so not very old, she was commissioned by Arthur Edward Waite, who wanted to create a deck of cards. She was commissioned by him to paint them in 1909. And the interesting thing, the reason why I love them, is because she packed each card full of symbolism, but not in a way that hits you over the head. It's the sort of thing where even today, 8 years later, I'm still discovering things that I've overlooked in different cards.
Wow.
So, oh yeah, so they're deceptively simple, but there's so much going on, and also she has a sense of humor, which I love. There's just something about her style, and a lot of the cards, the card decks that came after this deck that appeared in 1909, they are, and to this day, they're really variations of her, you know, of this deck, the Rider-Waite deck.
Yes.
So for me, this original deck, it has everything that I need. I see a lot of decks and I think that they're cheesy. For me, and see, every tarot reader is going to have a very strong personal opinion about their favorite deck. And I know a lot of people don't care for the Rider-Waite deck. There's something about her artwork that just, like I said, resonates with me.
Well, I know that you use tarot in your teaching, right? Sometimes?
Sometimes I do. I've taught a class at Hollins University, a short-term, a January class on tarot, which was amazing. I'll tell you, when it comes to my classes, my mental health classes, what my students clamor for are affirmation cards. It's really just cards, you know, every so often during the semester.
They need them.
Yeah, right, exactly, they do. But I'll tell you, I pass around a deck. There's a deck called The Language of Letting Go deck by Melody Beattie. And I've been doing this now, I guess, for 3 years, 4 years. And, I mean, the students, they just, they're always asking, when can we, you know, have more cards? So I often in teaching, I'll use an affirmation deck because they pick a card and they walk away with something to think about.
That's good. I've used the Rider-Waite in my teaching when I taught a myth, dream, and symbol course, so it's easy to bring it in that context. And it really helps to answer the question, what's an archetype? Because that's... Here, look at this deck, and you'll see yourself in there. You'll see situations that you recognize, and so I love that archetypal aspect of it. And now, do you give? I know you use the deck in a variety of ways and settings. I'm wondering, do you give professional readings at all, or you charge people money, or not?
Sure.
Really?
I do. And it's interesting because I have friends and colleagues in the tarot world who are absolutely psychic and can use tarot in that manner. And it's interesting. I find that when I give readings, for people who are not interested in any sort of quote unquote therapy or therapeutic or intuitive reading, which is where it's more of a back and forth sort of thing. You know, I'm using the tarot more as a projective tool. You know, when someone comes to me and they just want to know what the cards are going to tell them, I find that I'm able to tap into a part of myself that allows me to read the cards in that way. So I enjoy doing that. I prefer using the cards therapeutically because I like that give and take with a client.
So
I'd say even though I do occasionally more like straight up professional readings, I definitely use it more in the therapeutic context where I don't pretend to, you know, predict a future for someone, but ask them how the cards are relating to them on an intuitive level.
Yeah. So in fact, you're talking about your professional psychotherapy practice. And so you bring the cards into that. How so? I think they're very good for opening up a dialogue. And how often do you do that? Do you do that with every client, or at what point, you know, would you introduce something like that?
Oh, that's a good question because I live in Southwest Virginia. Definitely part of the Bible Belt. And so people, you know, a number of people here certainly feel very strongly about tarot and in a negative way.
Yes.
That it is a tool of the devil. And, you know, people will go back to the newer Old Testaments and talk about laws against divination, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have to build rapport with clients. And also, that being said, most of the people that I see, if I'm seeing them, you know, I'm not a Christian counselor. Like, there are plenty of Christian counselors where I live in Virginia. So the people who are looking for that won't end up with me. Typically, I'm getting people, and I see a lot of younger people who are open or to tarot, or they already use it themselves. And so I gather that as I build rapport with a client pretty quickly. And so I offer it as an option, as something to explore, something that we can use very briefly if they want, or spend an entire session on. And so because people know that I'm okay either way, you know, they end up feeling comfortable telling me if they're open to that or not. But I find a surprising number of people, in my experience at least, are interested in using it. And that's just to go into the idea that I feel like psychotherapy is very much overdue, I think, for giving tarot some recognition and respect, because I think it's an amazing therapeutic tool, and I think that we could reach a lot of people with it but you often don't hear about it really being used in therapy sessions.
Right. I think, you know, I kind of agree with Wald. I think that day is coming because I've met, you know, I've met some other people who are therapists who have used it in their work. And, you know, as a projective device, it's, I think it's as useful as the traditional tools like the Rorschach and the thematic apperception test and so on. I find the cards really open up because they are archetypal. They seem to bring people into deep places very quickly.
Mm. Oh, they do. I mean, each card tells a story. You know, each card is a dream. You know, each card by itself is so rich. And so the dialogues that end up occurring as a client and myself will look at even a single card, like you say, it really taps into a deep place. And that's why what I love about using the cards in therapy is if I want, it can be a 2-minute conversation or a conversation that can last for an hour. You know, it just depends on how deep we want to go.
Yeah.
That's how powerful the cards are. That's why I love them. I think there's a lot there.
Is there a story or two that come to mind, you know, without giving details away of private details about a client? Is there a story or two that stands out in your mind of a time when it was particularly useful?
Well, I'll tell you, and that's another great question, because what I found, to kind of preface things, people always get the cards that they need.
You know that? Yes,
and,
right.
And I'm a believer. I mean, the thing is, when people are open to listening to what the cards, you know, have to tell them, it always, without fail, strikes a chord that is needing to be struck. And the most interesting, one of the most interesting things that has ever happened to me, which really gave me pause, was I was working with a client and we were using the cards and, you know, using the cards to talk about boundaries and strengthening boundaries. And I'll often have a person before they leave, let's say we've done a session and we're using the cards, before they leave, I want them to walk away with some food for thought. You know, we've already got a lot of that throughout the session, but just one thing to walk out the door with, something to really focus on. And I'll have them just pick a card. Now, that's the card to walk away with. And this person, over the course of 3 sessions, that last card that they picked, quote-unquote, at random, it was the same card each of those 3 times.
Oh, my goodness.
And it boggled my mind because there are 78 cards in the deck. And it sounds impossible. It sounds illogical, but I have to say that has happened to me with clients and with myself more than once. Actually, it's not uncommon. I myself have an affirmation card deck that I enjoy using, and I'm continually picking the same card from that deck. It's a 50 card deck, and what I think continually reaffirms my faith in using tarot is when that same card appears again and again. And
now,
explain it.
Go
ahead.
Did that card, in fact, speak in a powerful way to this person's issues about boundaries and so on?
It did. And what the message was is that this person is needing to continue to work on these issues, because as the second session ended and the same card popped up, and then, okay, this is important. I obviously need more work on these issues. And then with the third session, both this person and I were thinking, okay, we really need to address this, because the deck is communicating with you very plainly regarding work that's needing to be done as far as strengthening boundaries. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and that's just one example of how the cards communicate with myself, with the client. It's interesting. I mean, the thing that I see often, again, asking me, you know, cards in action, what I see again and again is when I start, well, I give the deck to my client, and the client will shuffle. It's amazing to watch a client's face as they choose cards, and because what happens is as soon as the cards are turned over, their faces light up with recognition, like, oh, yeah, you know, this is something that I'm needing to focus on. And I hadn't thought of it before, but now with it staring me in the face, because that's what the cards are doing. Once you turn that card over, and because it's all visual, now all of these associations are triggered. And so what I yes. see again and again, and yeah, and so what I love is that in that instant, that person now is connecting with something that they know it's true on a very deep level, but it wasn't in their consciousness. And now that it's been drawn out, now that it's been triggered, off we go. You know, now that dialogue is being created between me and the client, and we can stick with that, you know, that one card or three cards, or we can start to choose other cards. We're off and running with
that. Yeah. Now, what about in your own life? Is there a story or two that come to mind when the tarot has proven useful for your own personal issues or decisions?
I think, it's interesting. I wrote a book called The Buddha Diet. Which,
is it a diet book, in fact?
This is a diet book, but don't, yeah. But I'm against diets. It's funny. I was working with a lot of people dealing with emotional eating. And, my question became, people know consciously that they're hurting themselves by emotionally eating. They always regret it. You know, why do we treat ourselves in ways that we know, are not the best for us? And so I came across the story of the Buddha and how he starved himself. And then he realized that wasn't, he was being mean to himself and that wasn't the way. And once he started to show himself some compassion, that's when he achieved enlightenment. And I thought, maybe the trick is, how do we teach people to show themselves self-compassion, to be self-compassionate? Because then maybe, they wouldn't treat a loved one the way they treat themselves, So how do we change that way of thinking? And so I ended up writing this book that kind of outlined my thoughts on that. And I self-published it. I published it through Amazon. But I did a reading for myself to give me some insight as far as how the book would be received out in the world.
Yes.
And what I got, and it's funny, so what I got from the cards was a very, I wouldn't say it was a negative reading, but it was a very underwhelming reading. Just a lot of low-key cards, nothing that really indicated that this book would actually reach an audience. And lo and behold, that's what happened.
this is not the kind of story we love to hear.
and I think it prepared me because I what I had to figure out was, food issues, that's a very large market. And how does my, my little book reach the people who it can help out there in the world? And even though I'm proud of what I did, I think what I learned was, maybe I'm not in the position yet to put that out there where it is really going to resonate with people. And it's funny because looking back, I realized in the reading that I did, that's what I got, that this book wasn't going to reach the people perhaps that I would have liked it to have reached.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if you got a few more orders as a result of this conversation. So maybe it'll pick up. Now, speaking about a book, let's talk about your, I guess it's your latest book. The Tarot Activity Book.
Yes.
What led you to, it's an incredible book. What led you to write
it? Well, this is a book I wish I had had when I was starting out 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's really as simple as that. When I began, I graduated with my MSW, and I knew that I wanted to become a therapist. So I was, preparing to become licensed. And I thought, I really want to use this in therapy. But I've never met anyone who's used it as a therapist. How can I learn how to do this? So, and there are some books out there about Tarot and psychology. Few and far between, but they're mostly using a Jungian perspective,
yep.
which I found very helpful, and that actually deepened, you know, the whole archetypal piece, you know, that deepened my interest in Tarot. But I thought, just you know, practically, like when I'm in session with a person or if I'm leading a group, you know, how can I use these cards? And I was really stumped. And what I discovered as the years went by was that the expressive arts therapists out there, especially art therapists, they were using art materials in really interesting ways in sessions with clients, again, either individually or with groups. And the more I would read, the more I would talk to people who never mentioned using tarot, you know, other things, you know, I would think to myself, gosh, each one of these 78 cards, they're a little mini piece of art. Why couldn't I take some of the ideas and the inspiration, you know, from expressive arts therapists and apply that to tarot cards?
Yeah, and you really did. So what was the audience that you were writing it for? Other therapists such as yourself or
who? Yeah, exactly. I knew that I hadn't read a book, because what I would do is I would just, as I would get an idea, I would just write it down in a notebook. And pretty, you know, after, I guess, 6 or 7 years, I had a notebook full of ideas of things that were potential therapeutic applications of tarot. And I started using them myself and seeing what would work and what wouldn't work. But I noticed that, okay, there still aren't any books for therapists wanting to use tarot. And conversely, there weren't necessarily, there are some books, but none that really collected ideas for using tarot cards in an expressive arts manner, like in a therapeutic manner, you know, for tarot card readers. So I thought to myself, I would love for people who identify as tarot card readers to have this as a resource, just to do fun, interesting, creative things with tarot cards that maybe they hadn't thought of before, and being inspired by the expressive arts therapies that maybe they hadn't been exposed to. So I thought this would be great for them. But then on the other hand, people who are therapists, who would have the opportunity to use tarot cards in a therapeutic context, let's say working with trauma or depression or anxiety, you know, this would be a way to use the cards creatively that could allow them to go down avenues that maybe they hadn't considered before. So the audiences I had in mind were those two.
Well, you know what? I've got another one for you, because I think teachers, these are wonderful classroom activities that could be woven into, you know, I was lucky to teach at a place where I had a lot of freedom and could teach a course like Myth, Dream, and Symbols. But I think these are activities that could be woven into a wide variety of psychology classes by a creatively inclined instructor. I could imagine uses in abnormal psychology, introduction to psychology, personality theory, you know, many of the traditional ones, maybe not experimental psychology, but but quite a few where it could work in. The structure is very unique. I now understand more about it that you generated ideas over a period of 6 or 7 years. I didn't count them, but it looks like you have around, 30 or 40 activities? Do you know the number?
I've got about 100.
About 100. I was just estimating. It seemed like a lot. Now you've got a section called Conversation Starters.
Right.
And that strikes me as a really cool idea, because in my experience, the tarot, as I mentioned earlier, can very quickly get you into some meaningful conversations. Are there a couple of your favorite activities in that section that you could mention?
I think, I know I have one. I think it's in that section, the dinner party. One of my favorite things to do is to ask people, okay, if you're having a dinner party and you can invite 6 cards, which 6 would you invite and why?
Oh, great.
That's a lot of fun, because number one, it makes us think. You know, it makes us think, well, which cards would I want to hang out with, you know, over dinner? And why? What is it about those cards? So it's neat personally to think about that, but then also if, when you're around people, to get their sense of which cards resonate with them is also very interesting. So that's one that I enjoy doing.
You know, and it makes me think that actually at an actual dinner party or some other kind of little gathering, some little activity like that could be a great, you know, conversation starter, a great way of, you know, deepening things.
You're right. Yeah, no, that's a good idea.
Is there another one that comes to mind from that section, conversation starters? I probably should have told you to keep a copy of your book in front of you.
Yeah, oh, I've got one right over here. I think, well, one that I like that I enjoy doing, which is a real quick one, but it's powerful, the idea of a gift. You know, the idea that, okay, you know, we're either going to pick a card at random or deliberately choose one, but the assumption is this card has a gift for you.
Yep.
What is it?
Yep.
And then just, you know, seeing what pops into consciousness. So
I have actually come up with that same idea in my classes. So I like it.
Yes. Well, it's good. It's important stuff, I think, for people to think about that. Yeah.
There's another section in the book with a whole bunch of activities underneath it called writing and journaling, which sounds self-explanatory, but maybe not. What are a couple of your favorite activities in that section?
I think, let's see, well, there's one, it's called release. I'm a big fan of ritual. I like burning things and tearing things up, you know, all sorts of
burying things, maybe.
Right. Well, but you know, I think that we don't take advantage of the power of ritual. I think that as therapists, I believe that, you know, the shamanistic way of doing things was so powerful. And so I like the idea of, because the cards are tangible, you know, doing something with the cards physically. So I think there's an exercise where a person is thinking about, either on their own or with a therapist, or with a reader, a tarot reader, but something that they need to release. And the idea is to go through the deck and pick a card that symbolizes what it is time to release.
Mm-hmm.
And I like journaling. I mean, I love taking the time to write about, you know, what it is I need to release and why this card is connected to that, and to journal about what I need to do now. You know, what am I going to do symbolically with the card? You know, am I going to walk it up a mountain? You know, because I live in the mountains, so that's something that's doable. You know, am I going to walk it to the top of a mountain and then, you know, bury it or burn it or do something to it or tear it up or whatever?
That's a great activity. Yeah.
I
love that.
Well, Milton Erickson, I mean, Milton Erickson, as far as just the things that he would have people do ritualistically in order to gain insight. I feel like using the tarot deck to do those sorts of things. It's a natural combination.
Yeah. I need to keep us moving here. The last major section is called Arts and Crafts. Is there one that I think that was the one that was most surprising for me to discover. And, of course, it makes sense now when you talked about really going to the expressive arts for some inspiration.
Yeah.
Is there one that stands out for you particularly in that section?
Well, there's one, I think it's called Destruction and Regeneration, speaking of, you know, destroying things. But what I love about the Rider-Waite deck is that it comes in four sizes. There's a little mini one, then there's a small, there's a normal, and then there's a giant, which because I love the deck so much, I'm so happy to have these big, you know, cards. To me, they should be framed. But, what I do, and some people have a hard time with this because I'm asking them to actually cut up the cards. And the other thing that's good about using the Rider-Waite deck is that they are so easily available. You can buy multiple copies. They're affordable. But what I love doing is taking different sizes of the cards, cutting up different cards, and recombining different pieces of various cards to create a new card.
Mm-hmm.
So this new tarot card that can represent whatever is made up of these other symbols that are found on different cards. And so it's a neat way to kind of think out of the box and create something new, to be creative in that sense. Mm-hmm. And it's neat because you never really know what you're going to come up with. So to me, it's a lot of fun.
Yes, yes. You mentioned Milton Erickson, a famous hypnotherapist that most of us would like to emulate as much as we can, although he was just a natural. I mean, I don't know to what extent that's possible.
Yeah.
In one of your last emails to me, you noted my interest in hypnosis, and you let me know that you use gongs and singing bowls to induce trance. Tell us a little bit about that. Under what circumstances, to accomplish what?
Sure. One of my interests, or one of my hobbies, is playing the hand drums. And that led me to reading about people who, again, in different cultures, who use sound ritualistically for healing, to induce trance. And that led me to singing bowls. And I started out using Tibetan or Himalayan singing bowls in private sessions with clients as an induction to induce that state of relaxation, because what I found was that there's something about the sound of a singing bowl that I don't sing it. Usually you play a singing bowl by rubbing a wooden mallet around the rim. What I do is I take a mallet, like a xylophone mallet, mm-hmm. a soft mallet, and I hit the side of it. It's a very gentle sound. But I was finding that people would just go under very quickly upon hearing that sound. So I started using that individually with clients, and sometimes for hypnosis, other times just to relax if they were feeling anxious.
Mm-hmm.
And that led me to gongs. And I don't use gongs therapeutically just because it's too big. But I use it with groups. I typically will do gong sound meditations at yoga studios. And what I have found is that the vibrations of the gong, because I'll usually play the gong for about 45 minutes or so straight.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like an envelope of sound. The vibrations are so strong. They will, and people are lying down, but it will take people to very interesting, deep, but in a very kind of healing way, very deep places. So I'm just a fan of using vibration to bring people mm-hmm. to good places. Yeah, I love that sort of stuff.
Wow, I wish we lived closer to each other because we share some common interests. I thought about trying to get into finger drumming. I don't know where I got that interest, but then I found some people, on YouTube and some people who really champion it and do lots of performances and so on. And I thought, wow, that could be something for me to get into.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to learn to do it?
You know what? You should pursue it. It really doesn't take that long. I mean, I've been playing for about 20 years or so. But
wow.
if you can find a good teacher or sit in with a drum circle, mm-hmm. that sort of drumming is pretty easy to pick up, and I find it's a lot of fun, and it's powerful. I think as therapists, we are absolutely connected to a heritage that includes shamanism.
I do too.
And from the very beginning, shamans were using rattles and drumming to heal. So you should pursue that. I think it'd be fun.
Okay, I'm looking for something. Not that I ever sit around and wonder, like you did way back when.
Yeah.
What What should I do?
Right.
I have space. I'm bored. I don't seem to get that these days.
Yeah, I long for those days.
Right. Finally, there's a third area that we might touch on. You
sure.
teach courses on gender and women's studies, and as a therapist, you specialize and work with transgendered clients. There's probably more to talk about there than we'll have time for, but
yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what drew you to this work and
sure.
and what it's like doing that sort of work in a relatively conservative Virginia.
This is something that's near and dear to my heart. I've never really been comfortable with the idea that men, just because you're a man, you're supposed to act a certain way, or just because you're a woman, you're supposed to act a certain way. So I've always been dubious of gender norms and rules. And when I went to graduate school for anthropology at the University of Hawaii, there was a pretty visible transgender population, male to female population in Hawaii, pretty big community. And I met some people, got to know them, and the stories that I heard were just fascinating, because in Hawaii, there is very much a connection between indigenous Hawaiian healing and being mahu, or transgendered.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my first book. I ended up collecting life stories of people who were transgendered and ended up living in Thailand for almost 2 years. And same thing, that people who were transgendered, a direct connection with spirit mediumship and healing. And my wife and I ended up putting a book together of life stories of those of younger people who were transgendered. And when we ended up moving to Virginia and I went into social work, I knew that, because I guess what I learned about people who were actually transsexual was that they were often re-traumatized by the very people who were supposed to be helping them, by their therapists.
Hmm.
And I thought, I'm interested in becoming a therapist, and I want to be able to afford people who are transgendered the dignity and respect that they deserve. And what I discovered is, living in Southwest Virginia, in Roanoke, Virginia, to be specific, there really weren't any therapists. There was nobody serving the transgender community. And so as I started to work as a therapist, because of the experience I had working with the communities in Thailand and in Hawaii, I had some knowledge. But, as the word spread that I was a therapist who was very open and respectful, I started working with more clients, started gaining a lot of experience, and I guess in the last 8 years or so have just, that's been my focus, because truly, in a 2-hour radius of where I live, I'm pretty much the only therapist who identifies as somebody who specializes in gender identity issues. And I think what surprised me the most was, even though this is pretty much rural Virginia, the transgender community, relatively speaking, is pretty large. And I continue to get new referrals all the time from people who are coming out younger and younger as transgender. And I love being able to be a resource. Probably my biggest problem is, where I live, there aren't any doctors who prescribe hormones. And almost everyone who sees me, who wants to transition from one gender to another, begins with hormones. And I would say that's the worst part of my job. I hate having to send people 2 hours away to see a doctor, because the small city where I live literally doesn't have any doctors who are willing to work with transgender patients.
Well, clearly you have to go to medical school now.
Yeah, that's right. I do. That's my next degree, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've already got three.
Yeah, right. I just keep adding. I can cash them in for a PhD. But no, that's the thing that's been so interesting is just hearing about people's lives, growing up in very conservative families and
yes.
what they do to survive. Yeah.
Wow. That's really fascinating to me. And I've been really engaged by a series of Thai novels about Thailand. There's a crime series, and I'm blocking on the guy's name. Maybe maybe you know the series. It's a wonderful series of a detective, Chitley Jeep or something like that is the name of the detective.
Oh, okay. I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah. If you haven't read any of those, I'll have to mention it here. I just block on names so badly, but I love those novels, and that whole transgender thing plays very strongly in the novels. It's right there with his sidekick as somebody who's in the process of, and then goes through the whole transgender thing, and it's written very sympathetically, and. And so it's interesting to me to hear confirmation that, in fact, all of that stuff that's in these crime novels is, in fact, factual. It's based on factual stuff. Including the tie-in to it being a kind of a respected, recognized and respected role in Thai society.
Yeah, it certainly was, and depending on where in Thailand you are, more or less respect is accorded to people who are transgender. But it's when it comes to Asia, Thailand really leads the way as far as activism, transgender and gay and lesbian activism. Yeah.
Well, Andy Metzner, is there anything else that you'd like to say before we wrap it up here?
Just I'm honored again as a listener. It's an honor to be talking to you right now, and I'm really pleased just because my dream has been for the last several years for people in the psychology community, you know, psychologists, to take tarot more seriously, to pay attention to it because it offers so much. So I hope that people who are listening who maybe hadn't thought about tarot before can think about it again less as a tool for psychic prediction and more as an expressive arts tool that they could actually integrate into a counseling practice. So I'm glad to have the opportunity to share, you know, with people. I'm so glad that you're interested as well. So thank you.
Well, I'm so delighted to meet you, and I'm hoping that
likewise.
There'll be other occasions for us to speak.
Thank you.
And if I ever get back to that part of the country. I actually visited Hollins.
You did?
I think it was Hollins College.
Years
ago when I was an undergraduate, I had a girlfriend who had finished up there, and so we went down.
Oh. It's a small world.
Yeah, it really is. So, Andy Metzner, thanks for being my guest on Shrink Wrap Radio.
You're welcome. Thank you.
What a fascinating and interesting guy Andy Metzner is. We share so many interests that I wish he lived closer by. I was particularly excited to hear that he's been very active with finger drums and gongs and Tibetan singing bowls for a number of years. I would love to see his work with these tools on YouTube, and I suggested to him that he put some of that there. I think he plans to do so, and I'm looking forward to it when he does. His book, The Tarot Activity Book, is a real tour de force, I think. I'm impressed by the creativity that he's brought to bear in it. This book would be very useful not just for people who are interested in reading the tarot, but for any people who are involved in teaching or leading workshops of various sorts, as well as counseling, psychotherapy, and coaching. The tarot cards are intrinsically interesting and evoke curiosity, even from people who have never encountered them before. And Andy's activities in his book can be used for icebreakers, team-building exercises, self-exploration and sharing in small groups, and so on, limited only by your own imagination. In the presentation that I recently gave in New York City on the potential of psychology and tarot, I suggested that psychology, particularly psychotherapy, and tarot share an interest in the power of story as a carrier of life-affirming meaning. And I went on to say that the intersection of tarot and psychology have a shared history in the 60s, primarily. They share shamanic roots. They both can serve as transformational catalysts. They can be used for self-exploration, self-understanding, for change, for personal growth, for healing, and for soul-making. And I went on to talk about the affinities between psychology and tarot, and I think they exist in psychotherapy, for example, narrative therapy in particular, Jungian psychology, humanistic psychology, transpersonal psychology, positive psychology, projective testing, personal development, self-exploration, counseling, career guidance, and coaching, among others. Now, if you'd like to purchase Andy's book, the Tarot Activity Book, as always, you can use the Amazon.com widget in the right-hand sidebar on our site.
Hey there, this is Louise from Australia. I just wanted to let you all know how good I feel about donating to Shrink Wrap Radio. It's such an awesome show. I really love each week. There's just something different and something fantastic to be able to learn about and contribute towards my own personal growth. And I think that it's only fair that we give something back. So how about you go on there, click on that PayPal button, and give Dr. Dave the boost he deserves. Shrink Wrap Radio, it's all in your mind.
Thank you, Louise. There's no way I can improve on that. As most of you probably know, we have a Shrink Wrap Radio app for both iOS and Android devices, and the app itself is called Podcast Box. I recently learned from a couple of listeners that Podcast Box had stopped at episode 347. I'm happy to report that I was able to contact tech support and get that issue fixed. So I apologize to any of you who may have been inconvenienced by this lapse and want to let you know that the app is back on track. And if you have an iOS or Android device and aren't using our very handy and convenient app, let me encourage you to do so. Just go to the Shrink Wrap Radio website and click on the Apps tab at the top of the page. I'm happy to report that at last we have a new transcript on the site. It's number 349, Intuition and Dreams with David Sorby, and it was transcribed by Gloria Allman. Thanks so much for that, Gloria. Now, of course, Gloria can't do all these by herself. She's been doing a number of them recently. We always have an ongoing need for transcribers, so if you'd like to make that sort of contribution, please do drop me an email, including which episode you'd like to transcribe. It might be a very recent one, or you can go to the transcriptions page on our site, and you can see which ones have not been transcribed as of yet. And some are even called out in red. Finally, I want to thank you for being a Shrink Wrap Radio listener. Please spread the word to bring others into the fold, and I'll continue to surprise you, I hope, with abundant and varied content.
Hi, this is Dr. Craig Sermon, co-author of Fast Minds and assistant professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School, and you are on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Thank you, Dr. Craig Sermon, who I am happy to announce will be my guest on our next episode. More about that in a bit. But first, let's take a quick dip into the old email bag. And a quick dip it will be, because I've only got one today and it's quite short. It's from Jesse, who writes, "Hello, Shrink Wrap Radio. I am reading over your transcript for podcast number 303 and notice on pages 17 and 18 out of 21, that J.B. Ryan is written as J.B. Ryan. I appreciate this podcast in particular very much and figured I would make you all aware." And that's from Jesse. And he put a question mark after "all," evidently not clear that "all" is just little old me. Sometimes people think I've got a whole staff and studio going here. I do not, which gives me a lot of control, and I'm fine with that. So I really appreciated Jesse calling that to my attention. And please, if you hear something that's going wrong here, like the person who notified me that, actually two people notified me that podcast box had stopped working. And here's Jesse letting me know that there's a misspelling in the transcript. That's really useful information for me, so I really appreciate it. And of course, there will be mistakes in the transcripts because these are volunteers who do the transcription, and I'm very happy for it. And I don't have time to go through and read each one in close detail. I just kind of trust it to the transcribers and know that there are going to be some mistakes in there. But if somebody lets me know, I will go in and make the corrections. So with that, we'll wrap it up for today. As always, you can send me emails, which I will then read, shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. You can also leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You can leave voicemail for me on Skype, where I'm ShrinkPod, or you can leave messages on our message phone at 206-350-9918. So thanks to psychotherapist Andy Matzner for sharing about his use of Tarot, as well as his work with transgendered clients. As I mentioned earlier, my next show will be with Harvard psychiatrist Dr. Craig Suhrman, and we'll be talking about his research and clinical work with adult ADHD. So I hope to see you then. This is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
I've been doing some hard traveling, I thought you know. I've been doing some hard traveling way down the road. With a heavy heart and a worried mind, Shrink Wrap Radio's a real good find. I've been doing some hard traveling, Lord. Dave's been doing some good listening, I thought you know. Dr. Dave's been podcasting way down the road. With a big fat mic and a soothing voice, you know he's offering you a real good choice. He's been doing some podcasting, Lord. I've been doing some deep traveling, I thought you'd know. I've been doing some deep exploring way down the road. With a happy heart and a bright spirit, life's calling me, ain't gonna fear it. I've been doing some deep traveling, Lord. I've been doing some wide exploring, I thought you'd know. I've been doing some self-exploring way down the road. With Jung and Freud and soul and psyche, Dr. Dave's in my ear to guide. We've been doing some wide traveling, Lord.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know. And just enough to make you dangerous.